It was a dirty election.
Mr.
And it's
President,
happening again right now in California.
You've never presented evidence.
It's happening
that the
right now in California. Right now, it's looking. Look at what's
Where's
happening
the
in California.
To that?
It's
the Republicans
4 days.
Are doing well in California.
In California, it's. No, they're not. They're dropping fast because it's a rigged election. Let me tell you, it's 4 days. And they aren't even close
that's
to coming
how they,
up
that's
with
how they count
You know
the
why
votes
they're doing that? Because they're cheating on the election.
There's what do you have evidence they're, to support?
All
that?
I have to do is look. All
but,
I have to do is
that's
look.
That's not evidence.
And I listen. And I listen to people but, and let's see what happens.
But sir, that's not evidence.
Do you think it's appropriate
that's how they that they count the votes?
Do you think it's appropriate that they have an election and 5 days later they're nowhere close to picking
State
a winner?
State and local officials acknowledge they are slow. They're urging.
No, they're crooked.
They're urging
crooked.
The votes to be counted quickly. That's how they
they're
vote in
crooked,
California.
They're crooked, just like you're crooked. Your press is crooked, and Meet the Press is crooked.
To be fair, I'm not crooked, but let's
really.
Let's
well,
continue.
You play right into their hands.
Let's continue.
You're either crooked or you're stupid.
Let's
you
continue.
Play right into their hands with this rep. You know that these elections are rigged. Your network knows that they're rigged. You know that I won an election in a landslide, and I got 94% bad press.
But, Mr. President,
you know why
you've
I got
never
that?
Presented
because you have no
evidence.
Credibility.
But you've never presented evidence that it was rigged. Let's keep talking about I want to talk about Todd
You
Lynch.
Have more evidence. There's more evidence than ever presented.
Let's talk
Your
about
Your elections
you
in this country.
Court.
We're like a third world country.
But, sir,
Your elections are crooked, and you're crooked, and Meet the Press is crooked,
but, Mr.
and
President.
So is ABC and CBS. And CNN.
But, Mr. President,
you're one-sided, crooked network. Sorry, let's call it quits because I've had enough. Thank you, darling. Have a good
Mr.
time.
Mr. President, let's please. I traveled all the way to Wisconsin.
I've sat in the rain with you.
I know.
I've
I traveled
sat in the rain
all the
with
way
you
to
for an
Wisconsin.
Hour, on and off in the rain, and I've given you enough time. You ought to straighten out your press because you know what?
Mr. President,
a country can never be great with a dishonest
press. Listen,
you
traveled all the way to Wisconsin for this interview.
Well, wasn't that a little bit disgusting? We have Kristen Welker from Meet the Press who has no respect for her president. You know, that's the way they have addressed him since he was president in 2016. They just ridicule when he's a man that cannot be ridiculed. He actually does know what he's talking about. He always, from my perspective, I can't ever remember. They also said he was a liar. Remember that charge against him, a pathological liar? You notice they dropped that because he isn't. If you listen to those long cabinet meetings where he lays out he knows about everything, the questions following, no matter what they ask him, he knows. And he's accurate about it. So Kristen just didn't listen to him. She kept talking over him and, like she looks like she, I'm sorry. This is almost like, it's like a worm arguing with a giraffe. I mean, there's a greatness about him. I know, I don't care if some of you don't like him. You have to look past the tweets, the ugly things he says, which are true, his ego, all of that's not the best. But this man has become a giant in terms of what he's accomplishing for this country. And so here's Kristen. Nah, 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 but then nah, but then nah. She's like a little bug, like a little green fly, nipping at his feet. And he's so above her in his knowledge and experience. It's just pretty disgusting to watch her do that. That's my opinion, and I have a strong one. I know I do. Well, today we're talking to John Eastman for the second time, and today we're going to be talking about the different states. We'll continue that discussion about what's happening in Phoenix, Arizona, and in Georgia, and I have a little kind of anecdote of what's happening in Michigan, and we might even touch on California again, because when it comes to elections, it's never a dull moment, and we'll get to that. But first, we talk about how to save babies all the time and their mothers, because preborn focuses on the mom and the dad, if you'll come and talk to them, because they actually provide ultrasound photos or images of the baby in the womb. And it's amazing. It's so powerful. You know, even if it's not your baby and you see that, it's just an amazing, really to me, a sign of the existence of God and his handiwork. Because how in the world can you explain the intricacies, the development in the gestational period of babies to have, fingers sucking and little eyes and a little cute nose. And you can sometimes even already see that the baby looks like a person, the mother or the father or grandmother or something. And it's very moving. And so what they do is powerful, and so we want to give them a shout-out all the time. And they help support this show. That's the least important thing I want to tell you. But I'm grateful that they do, because I'm so grateful they're our partners. It's very important to me to save lives. I felt that way for, you know, since I even became aware of abortion when I was 21. It was shocking to me. So if you want to help Preborn provide those ultrasounds, it's $28 for one ultrasound. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy, and make your most generous donation. All right, we'll take out your pen and paper, because the professor is going to be speaking to us, John Eastman, on this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
More than 1 week after an FBI raid on an election hub in Fulton County, we are hearing from Georgia's Secretary of State.
Just hours ago, Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger spoke to our Marissa Sarback. Marissa, joining us live in Fulton County tonight. Marissa, going one-on-one with the Secretary. What did he say today?
Faith, Jennifer, I asked him if he thought there was any merit to the federal government's claims of voter fraud in the 2020 election here in Georgia, and he doubled down on this. He does not believe that is the case. Now, he also told us he doesn't know exactly what the federal government is looking for when they conducted that raid after a judge signed off on the FBI coming in to seize hundreds of boxes of ballots and other election materials.
Obviously, the warrant was sealed, so what was in there, we don't know why they're doing this, and neither does obviously Fulton County or the American public.
Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger calling Georgia's voting system the safest in the country.
Because we now have a paper ballot, you can do a 100% hand recount, and the results in 2020 of the presidential race and also the U.S. Senate race was actually a 100% hand recount.
Fulton County Chairman Rob Pitts last week claiming the ballots were safe in Fulton County until the federal government took them into custody. Pitts also said he felt he might be arrested after the FBI investigation. We asked Raffensperger if he felt the same way.
That goes into crazy speculation of, you know, what people are saying, and so I have no comment on that.
I also asked him about the federal court, or excuse me, Fulton County filing a motion in federal court to get those seized items back. He said, point blank, it is a legal matter, and he has no further comment on this. Reporting live tonight, Marissa Sarback for 11 Alive News.
Okay, so I so well remember Brad Raffensperger, Secretary of State for the state of Georgia, during the 2020 election. I don't think I've ever been more disgusted, and yet I remember a good friend of mine reaching out to me to say that he was such a good guy, someone that I really respect. But Brad Raffensperger has now been fired by the people of Georgia. That's an aside. But John, I want your thoughts on those little things he mentioned. And I want to talk what's gone on after that FBI raid of all those boxes of ballots in Fulton County, Georgia. What's happened?
Well, first of all, there were several lies, demonstrable lies in his statements. And recall that on the day after the election in 2020, he announced that there were fewer ballots remaining to be counted than President Trump's margin of victory at the time. And then all of a sudden, a bunch of ballots appear in the next few days to alter the results of the election. And then he claims it was 100% accurate, a full recount. What he failed to note is that the recount in Fulton County on that recount came up nearly 18,000 ballots short. And then lo and behold, after the deadline for submitting the numbers of the recount, they claim to have found another 18,000 ballots to make up the difference. We now have, because of ongoing litigation, Favorito versus Raffensperger is the name of the case, evidence that ballots were multiple scanned or multiple replicated inside the machine and then double counted or triple counted We now have that evidence as well. So Brad Raffensperger is just simply lying when he makes those claims that the 100% recount was, it proved that the count was entirely accurate. We also know that I think the number is 350,000 ballots without any chain of custody documentation, as is required by law. We also know that he entered into a settlement with the Democrat Party in Georgia that weakened to virtually non-existence the signature verification process in Georgia. We also know that Fulton County ran portable precincts going into heavily Democrat neighborhoods in violation of state law that requires fixed precinct locations and early notification of them. We also know for a fact, and Brad Raffensperger lied about this as well, that people at Fulton County, observers in Fulton County State Farm Arena, were told to go home because they were stopping counting for the night. And then they pulled bins of ballots out from under the table after people had gone home and processed them in violation of Georgia law without notifying the observers that they were starting to process again. We know all of that, and Brad Raffensperger lied about it. He said, no, that there was no evidence that people had been sent home. Well, there was. There are sworn affidavits by people that specifically said they were sent home because counting was stopping for the evening. So lie after lie after lie in order for him to perpetuate this false narrative that everything was fine and perfect in Georgia. And you know, for me raising these kind of things, I have now been disbarred in California for stating the truth. There's an old adage about, you know, in an era of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. Well, I guess I'm a revolutionary because I've told the truth about all this, and I'm not going to stop telling the truth until we get to the bottom of it.
That's the truth, John. You really have been uncompromising. I guess that's why I feel like you're very dear friend. You inspire me. I'd like to think that that's what I do too. That's what I aspire to, the truth, because it has a power of its own. Even if we're losing, it has a power of its own. But but on the FBI raid down there, didn't they try to stop them and stop them from getting all the boxes? Do you remember? And do you know what the status of that is?
They did. They blocked efforts to get them. The FBI got a search warrant and went and took them. Fulton County then sued to get the ballots back, claiming that FBI had no probable cause. Well, that was already decided by a magistrate judge in D.C. that issued the search warrant based on a finding of probable cause. I do not know what exactly, but we've seen the search warrant now. It's been public, and it included information from a major fraud report that was done by two analysts called Rossi and Monkla, were their last names. And their information in that report was pulled together into this search warrant issued on probable cause. And what they point out is the numbers don't match. And so there are several federal statutes that could be implicated in addition to undermining the election. If any of the records were destroyed, and that includes not just ballots, but it includes poll books. It includes electronic data. Anything destroyed while, you know, within 22 months of the election or while it was under ongoing litigation is itself a violation of federal law. And so one suspects that that's one of the things that's being looked at. But also then to reconcile the numbers. You know, contrary to Brad Raffensperger's assertion, the recount did not confirm the validity of the original certification. It was off, and it was off by more than the margin of victory. And you know, so they may be looking at that as well. I don't know. I think there was a hearing last week on the lawsuit to retrieve these back. I don't recall whether that has resulted in a ruling yet, but news accounts of that hearing indicate that the court was pretty suspicious of Fulton County's claim that they had a right to return these ballots. And the other thing that's just laughable about Raffensperger's claim, that the ballots were secure until the FBI took them, as if the FBI is somehow less secure than the Fulton County clerk's office retaining those ballots. It reminds me of, you know, the state arguments in Minnesota and California and elsewhere against Harmy Dillon's efforts to get the voter rolls in those states, including Social Security numbers and the other identifying information of voters. And we can't give Social Security numbers to the federal government because that's privacy information. Well, I'm sorry, the federal government is the one that originates those Social Security numbers. So how is giving it to the very source of the number a violation of privacy rights? These are specious arguments that are put out there. Just like the one in California on Sheriff Bianco's efforts up in Riverside County to prevent anybody from actually looking at the evidence of what happened and trying to ascertain whether, in fact, there was illegality and fraud that occurred.
Well, and like just an example of the same thing is that Kristen Welker is, well, you know, they've explained that it takes them a long time. That's just the way they do things in California. They've always got a cover story. And I know back to Georgia, it was a mother and her daughter who were kind of heading that count late at night. It was all on video, so many of us saw that. They sued the President Trump for defaming
They sued Rudy Giuliani for defaming and won a $64 million judgment against Rudy Giuliani, which is just absurd.
It's absurd.
Quite apart from the fact of whether what he said was true or not, the video showed that they took those ballots out after people had left and that they processed them. State law is very clear. You're not prohibited from processing ballots when there aren't observers, but you are legally required to notify both the parties and the candidates if they want to have observers there. That notification never occurred. When people were sent home at the night and said, we're not going to start counting until tomorrow morning, come back then, and then they processed them anyway, that means that they were not given notification that processing of ballots was going to occur. That's where the illegal conduct occurred, even if the ballots were pristinely pure and valid. But the reason you have observers there is to make sure that there's nothing nefarious that goes on. The video appears to demonstrate that, in fact, multiple stacks of ballots were scanned several times. Now, if that's true, that's fraud. One of the reasons you have observers there is to prevent those kind of things from happening. And so the observers were not there. They weren't given notification that processing was going to reconvene, and that's where the violation of law occurred.
Yeah. Well, in reflection on that, they created a narrative for the people of Georgia. For the black community, this woman and her daughter happened to be black, and that, you know, it was terrible. They've ruined our lives, and so they have all this going on. And then Raffensperger is such a liar, as you just pointed out, but he did that in 2020. So smooth. Oh, no, there, you know, we've got perfect process. He was a snake. And I think for a long time the Georgians believed that, but now I think it's getting down into their DNA, and Raffensperger just lost his election, which thank God he did. So maybe something good will come from that.
By the way, our claim that he was lying, that he's a liar, there's already a court finding to that effect. In a case called Curling versus Raffensperger, the judge actually issued a ruling discrediting things coming out of Raffensperger's office because they had been so demonstrably making false statements to the court. So that occurred in August of 2019, maybe August of 2020, I forget. So there's already a court finding that he and his office were lying in court. And so, you know, the people of Georgia, I think, have finally had enough. What I'd like to see, though, is that the FBI close the loop, cross the T's, dot the I's on this investigation, that the seizure of these Fulton County ballots and other election materials, including One Hope's electronic election materials, will get to the bottom of it and be able to demonstrate why the analysis that was conducted by Monklin and Rossi was in fact true and evidence of both illegality and fraud in the conduct of that election.
Okay, one last quick question is, the charges against you in Arizona, are they still, have they been, I'm confused, have they been dropped or is it still pending?
No, it's still pending. And we had two things happen back in the spring of 2025. Arizona has an anti-SLAPP statute SLAP stands for Strategic Litigation Against Public Participation. Most states have them in civil litigation. So, you know, typical, a big developer wants to put in a high-density project and the neighbors don't like it, and they get up and they speak against it at the Planning Commission, and the developer files suits against them to try and scare them into silence. That's strategic litigation against public participation. And most states now have statutes that if you're the defendant, the victim, the target of such a lawsuit, you can file an anti-SLAPP motion at the very beginning of the case and get it dismissed and get your attorney's fees if they don't have a proof up front that your statements were defamatory or otherwise unlawful. Arizona amended its anti-SLAPP statute to include criminal prosecutions. And in February of 2025, the court ruled on my motion, my anti-SLAPP motion, that I had met my burden of establishing a prima facie proof that the prosecution was substantially motivated by the Attorney General's motive of deterring or retaliating against the exercise of First Amendment rights. And that means the Attorney General had to say, oh, no, I can prove that I didn't have any such motivation, which, given her clear motivations and public statements, is going to be hard for her to prove. Then the second thing that occurred a couple months later is the court ruled that the presentation by the Attorney General to the grand jury was so significantly biased and omitted key things that the case had to get remanded to a grand jury to see whether there would be a new probable cause finding on a more fair presentation of the facts. The Attorney General appealed those decisions, and the Arizona Supreme Court just last week denied her appeal. So we're now back with her having to decide pretty quickly whether to convene a new grand jury. And then the anti-SLAPP ruling is still out there that she has to respond to. And if she can't respond to it, then the case has to get dismissed and all of the defendants get their attorney's fees. So that's where things are going. But the case is still alive. The remand of the grand jury didn't end the case. It's still kind of sitting there in limbo. And in the meantime, me and Christina Bopp and Rudy Giuliani and all the electors down there are still under felony indictment, which, you know, poses a serious constraint on our liberties, our ability to acquire weapons or ammunition, and, you know, on my concealed carry permit, or my ability to get TSA pre-check renewed, or just the ordinary things like this. And they're dragging it out. It's now been 2 years since the original charges were filed, and of course 5 years since the conduct at issue. And they're just dragging it out. It's part of the lawfare effort to just make life so miserable and uncomfortable for anybody that dares to raise questions about illegality in elections so that other people won't ever stand up and do it in the future. And it's an outrage. As I understand it, though, these actions by these prosecutors are under investigation by the Department of Justice itself for conspiracy to infringe or violate constitutional rights. So I hope the Department of Justice is getting ready to bringing indictments there. I'd love to see Chris Mays, the Attorney General of Arizona, served with an arrest warrant and an indictment on this nationwide grand conspiracy that she seems to be part of.
Well, and the reason you went to Arizona, I should explain, because what happened in Georgia was pretty much the same thing. And so in both of those states, people like you were charged, but also just those regular people who stepped up to be, temporary electors. Not the real electors, but they were electors
contingent electors. Contingent on the still pending litigation being challenged. The reason that was necessary is the Constitution says the date that the electors meet and vote has to be the same throughout the country. And you can bet that the Democrats would be screaming bloody murder if they hadn't cast votes, if the election challenges that were then pending had gone Trump's way and the electors showed up with a certification that they were the valid electors. The Democrats would have said, "You can't, your votes can't be counted. You didn't cast them on that day." That's what they did to preserve the viability of those election challenges. Nothing unconstitutional or illegal about it. And it's, in fact, it's what John Kennedy's electors did in 1960. And there was no question that what they did was in any way contrary to law or the Constitution. It was necessary and required by the Constitution because of pending litigation. So this whole thing is a fraud. Calling it fake electors is a fraud. It's part of the narrative that the left has put out to scare people away from ever looking at what was done in 2020.
Well, and the part that I want to emphasize, and I don't think I've ever even covered this, John, but and I don't want to go into this too much because of our time, but regular people have had to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in attorney's fees who don't have resources. They're just regular people. They don't have that kind of money. And some of them have lost, I don't want to overstate it because I can't remember specifics, but I think some have lost, I don't know if they've lost their homes. They've just businesses. They just can't manage it. And some have gone into severe depression. And so they feel like they've lost a lot of their life trying to fight this. And it isn't resolved yet. And so that's the point. That's terrible. It really is just absolutely horrible. I don't know if you're following this one, but I'll just mention this. Pat Kolbeck, he's a former senator from Michigan, who's a good friend. I love Pat. And he's reporting that there's a sheriff named Dar Leaf, and he's made a criminal referral pertaining to non-citizens on the voter rolls. And those voter rolls means that determines the jury pool. So the point that Sheriff Dar Leaf is bringing up is that non-citizens are part of our juries. And that would negate a lot of the decisions that have been made. But the point I want to tell you, this is his actual, he signed his letter to the Honorable Prosecutor Lucido, which I won't read, but I want to read you the tag he puts on this. Sometimes in life, you have to look Goliath in the eyes and say, hey, I have a rock with your name on it. So anyway, yes, I love that.
Well, that's right. Look, one of the ways states that are honest with their elect voter rolls, they routinely get from the courts people that have begged off of jury duty by claiming they're non-citizens. Well, so that should immediately get them removed from the voter rolls. But in the states that like to have their voter rolls loaded with non-citizens and dead people and felons and people that have moved out of state, that doesn't occur. And they end up still on the voter rolls. And in states where they mail absentee ballots to every person on the voter rolls, you're putting out there a piece of gold that people can steal out of apartment building mailboxes and everywhere else and then sell them to the highest bidder to engage in fraud. It goes on routinely. That's why Sheriff Bianco is looking at it in Riverside. But in my view, it's also why Democrats like Attorney General Bonta are fighting so hard to prevent that investigation from occurring.
Well, none of this is going to happen if people are not steadfast, immovable, unshakable, which would describe you, John. And I want to ask you one last question, because you and I never talked about this on the air, and this could be a whole hour's conversation. So just give us the cliff notes. On the birthright citizenship case, which you, Pat, you put blood and toil into that. You're probably the nation's leading expert on that. The Supreme Court shot that down. That we can't stop birthright citizenship. I don't even know what their ruling said, but virtually people can come in here and have babies, and Chinese can have, fly in here and have a baby and get a United States passport and citizenship and then go back to communist China and wait till they grow up. And this is what they're doing. It's not just the Chinese, but what is the situation with that, John? Is there any hope to revisit that in another form?
Hang on one second, because you said something that happened there that I didn't think had happened yet. So let me just real quick. Yeah, no, the case has been argued. It was argued on April 1st. We don't have a decision yet.
Oh, I thought we did.
No, what's pending is a decision. It's likely that we're going to get that decision on the last day of the term, end of June, June 26th, maybe even the following Monday or Tuesday. But the issue is fairly simple. The 14th Amendment has two requirements for automatic citizenship. You got to be born on U.S. soil and residing in a state, to parents who are residing in a state, and you have to be subject to the jurisdiction. And the argument it turns on whether subject to the jurisdiction means just subjects to the laws, which virtually everybody within our borders is, even if they're here illegally, or does it mean something more than that? The evidence at the time the 14th Amendment was drafted strongly indicates that required something more than that, approaching allegiance to the country, not just being a temporary visitor, whether legally or illegally. And President Trump's executive order says it doesn't apply to temporary visitors. They don't owe that greater allegiance. They're therefore not subject to the jurisdiction in the way the amendment was originally intended. That's the issue that's pending before the Supreme Court right now. I think the argument that was made by people like me in my amicus brief, going back 25 years when former Attorney General Ed Meese and I filed an amicus brief in one of the enemy combatant war on terror cases after 9/11, and the formal briefs filed by the Department of Justice and Solicitor General John Sauer make a compelling case for why temporary visitors are not included. But the other side says, well, it's been this way for 100 years and therefore we can't revisit it. They're wrong about that. There's never been any Supreme Court holding that temporary visitors are included in the guarantee of automatic citizenship. So we'll see what the Supreme Court does. Speculation by commentators after the oral argument suggests that they're going to reject the president's executive order. But, you know, it's a little hard to read the tea leaves by people that sometimes play devil's advocates in their questioning. So we'll see what happens by the end of June.
You know what? That's now as you're talking, I'm remembering that people were so negative on the arguments they listened to. And I actually listened to a lot of the arguments myself. And I thought it's John Sauer argued, right, for the government?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I thought he did a brilliant job. I thought he did, fielding the questions, I just thought he was amazing. But the tea leaves of many people that I thought I trusted was that there was a lot of negative response to it. So that's what made me think I thought it was over. I really, truly did. So I'm glad we talked about that. I'm glad it's not over.
And I will say this, the narrative, the left-wing narrative machine went into full active mode within minutes of the argument. The New York Times falsely reported that Trump stormed out of the argument because he was not happy the way it was going. That's just not true. I was in the argument just two sections over from where he was, and I was not even aware that he had left. The people immediately behind him obviously would have seen that, but everybody in front of the bar would not have seen that. He left very quietly. He left because he had a pre-scheduled commitment back at the White House. This was all well known in advance. He did not storm out, but this was the propaganda narrative machine already kicking into high gear. The other thing, though, you know, they cite questions from John Roberts or Brett Kavanaugh or Neil Gorsuch or Amy Barrett that appeared to be hostile to the government's position. But unlike the liberals on the court who telegraphed their hand very easily, the middle of the court, the more moderate wing of the court, tend to ask questions if they think there's a weak spot in the argument that they're leaning towards supporting, but they think there's a weak spot in the argument. They'll ask a hard-hitting question to see if the answer satisfies their concerns. So it's very hard to tell from a hard-hitting question like that whether they are seeking to shore up a concern or whether they are really hostile to the argument. And you know, that's vintage Gorsuch and vintage Kavanaugh in particular. Now, you know, I don't necessarily disagree with the commentators that said it didn't look like it was going to go President Trump's way, but I don't think we can know that for sure until we get a ruling by the court at the end of the month.
Well, that's really great news to me. That's great. I'm so glad you told me that. But I would say the bits I heard, again, I will repeat, I thought John Sauer, when he was challenged, met every challenge. You know, sometimes you hear they're kind of shuffling or they are trying to come up with something, but he was just, here's the answer to that. No, here's the reason for that. And I was very impressed with him. So he probably got briefed by John Eastman, I'm guessing. But anyway.
Well, they certainly were reading my scholarship on this, but a lot of others. Their briefing all along the way has been spectacular. And, you know, me and my colleagues at the Claremont Institute have been writing about this for a quarter century. And some of their briefs came up with evidence in the Secretary of State's office or executive orders that we weren't even aware of. They've done a fabulous job. And as Churchill once said, you can only deserve victory, you can't guarantee it. But they really deserve victory here because they've laid the case out perfectly well and consistency with the not only the original understanding of the 14th Amendment, but with the core basic principles that our government is founded on consent of the governed, right in our Declaration of Independence. They've done a fabulous job.
Excellent. What a great note to stop on, John. Thank you so much. Thank you, always. And I guess until next time, we'll talk to you
all
soon.
Right.
All right. And this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Preborn makes it possible for us to have these conversations. And you all, so many of you have been faithful donors, just amazing. You are amazing to me. I would say that, you know, Preborn advertises on almost all the major talk shows and podcasts. And our show performs as well as, from my understanding, most of those major podcasts. And you know why? It's because of you. It's because of you. There are fewer of you, but you give generously and you really believe in saving babies. And so thank you for that. I'm deeply grateful. I'm deeply grateful. And so for just $28, which is the cost of a dinner right now, in most places where most normal people eat, you can sponsor an ultrasound or introduce a mom to her baby for the very first time. And 100% of your donation will go towards saving those babies. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. I want to take a moment to tell you about an event that's coming up June 16th to the 19th. It's going to be in Lincolnshire, Illinois. Okay, why would I be mentioning this? Because it's Turning Point USA. It's Turning Point USA, and it's absolutely fabulous. Bruce and I'm pretty sure we're going to be there. We'd love to see. You know, for those of you that don't live in Illinois or in the Chicago area, Southwest has some really good flights to Chicago. Wherever you are, trust me, I've taken them many times. And they're not bad in terms of the cost either. So this Educator Summit is what it's called, Courage in Our Convictions, Cultivating Clarity in Chaos. You know, Turning Point continues to be doing some absolutely incredible things, and this is just one more of them. The head of their education department is Hutz Hertzberg. You've heard Hutz on this show. He's a very close friend of mine, and he's been with Turning Point, you know, for several years now. Hutz is just a godly man, smart as he can be, and he had a near-death experience, which I had him come and share with on the program a few years ago. And so Charlie Kirk hired Hutz, and Hutz, you know, was able to really bring some wisdom to all that Charlie was doing. So who are the speakers at this conference? Erica Kirk is coming, George Barna, Al Mohler, John Stone Street, Megan Basham. She's the one who wrote Shepherds for Sale. She was our guest to talk about that. Riley Gaines, Mary Miller. Mary is a congresswoman from Illinois. She's been with us too, but it's been a while. She's a beautiful, beautiful woman who is a farmer who has like six children. And she's just a firebrand in Congress, strong believer in Christ. Now, some of these people I don't know, but I'll mention a few names. Ben Shetler, Ryan Walters, David Goodwin, Heather Lloyd, maybe they're familiar names to you. Bill Federer, Erwin Lutzer, you've heard those names because Erwin Lutzer has been on this show many times, and so is Bill Federer. Bill is just a real wonderful, masterful history, expert in history. You've heard his commentaries. And John Woodbridge is going to be there, Bruce Lockerbie, Scott Phelps. Scott's a guy who's been fighting or promoting abstinence for many, many years. Tom Morrison, Natasha Harris, let's see, I can't mention them all. I think I'll stop with that. But it's June 16th through the 19th in Lincolnshire, Illinois. And if you'd like to go, go to turningpointed.com. Turningpointed, as in education.com. Turningpointed.com. And check it out. You can make reserve a space. It's, again, June 16th through the 19th. in Lincolnshire, Illinois. Lincolnshire. That's on the north side of Chicago, by the way, in case you want to know. So, again, turningpointed.com.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Former Mesa County Clerk Tina Peters is out of prison tonight after serving more than 600 days behind bars.
She, of course, was convicted by a jury for her role in a 2021 security breach of her own county's election system after allowing outside access to voting equipment as part of an election fraud claim.
And she was released today following Governor Jared Polis's clemency decision.
So, you know, that's the best news I've had all year, I think, that Tina Peters was released. And the interesting thing is, you know, I can say this with some certainty. The federal government's been trying to figure out how to get her out. And because the Colorado authorities, because they are so far to the left, they're so wicked, they really are. If only I could tell you how they have treated Tina. The judge treated her so horribly. This is a woman who's now 70 years old. She's beautiful. She's a Gold Star mom. She's articulate and brave and courageous. And when she is a strong, strong believer in Christ, when she got into prison, which is a great shock to her after all these years, she started teaching Bible study. And some people loved it, but others hated her. So she's been attacked several times. And when her lawyers asked that she be moved to, you know, a safer place in the prison, the system refused. That's the way it's been. So when she tells on Steve Bannon's show about her condition, her health is really deteriorated, and she kind of details that. And she still looks beautiful, but you can tell it's been hard on her. It's been very depressing. And now she's out. I want to tell you, so because the Justice Department couldn't get the Colorado powers that be, because they're wicked. They're just wicked. They couldn't shake them loose for getting Tina out. She was sentenced to 9 years. 9 years in prison. So now, look, I'm not saying this had anything to do with that, but I'll just tell you. President Trump decided to move the national climate program that's based in Colorado to, I believe, Texas or someplace like, or maybe Alabama, I'm not sure. He moved it out of the state of Colorado. And then suddenly, the governor, Jared Polis, decided to give Tina Peters clemency. I'm just saying, I don't know if they're connected, but it seems to me like maybe they were connected. Tina has become a good friend. I've had her on the show a lot of times when I was doing the morning show. Several times, I should say. I don't want to overstate it. But we have developed a friendship, and she'll be on this show again. She'll be on it again. I just want to personally give her some time to recover. And, you know, just can you imagine the psychological effect, not the least of the physical effect? And so pray for Tina, because she's not a wealthy person. And this has been so hard on her. Yet she's been bold and brave, but it went on so long, I think it just became just difficult. So let's pray for her. But she's out, and that's the good news. Thank you, God. Thank you, Lord, for answered prayer. Just thank you. And so with that, today I'm going to end everything. And remember, we did a first part with John in the last podcast, and you'll want to go back and listen to that if you missed it. Well, it's time to say goodbye, but first, let me just remind you that Preborn is a sponsor. Preborn talks to women who find themselves in these very stressful pregnancies about life, about the God that created life, about the importance of it, about their personal heart and personal relationship with Him, who can change everything in your world, make things right. I mean, you can't take away the consequences of your sin, but God can make wonderful things come out of the bad decisions that you've made. He just can. So Preborn, it's $28 for one ultrasound. That's what they do. Show moms and even the dads, if they want to see the picture of their baby. It's a wonderful, wonderful process. If you want to help, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.